This week, scientists announced direct evidence of gravitational waves, the faint echoes of the immediate aftermath of the Big Bang. The find, if confirmed, provides important information about how our universe was formed and gives us a greater understanding of our place in it. Clara Moskowitz is an associate editor who covers astronomy, physics, spaceflight, and mathematics for Scientific American. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This discovery is being hailed as direct proof of the theory of inflation. I always thought that was about economics.
There's cosmic inflation, too, and we're talking about what happened in the first fraction of a nanosecond after the Big Bang.
Now, this was first proposed by a physicist named Alan, was it Guth or Guth?
Guth, Alan Guth in 1980.
34 years ago. What was he trying to understand when he came up with this inflation model?
We were trying to understand why the universe has certain properties that it has, and one of them is the fact that it's pretty smooth. In all directions that we look, matter seems to be spread out really evenly. You don't see large clumps and then big voids. And there's not a good explanation for how this happened until they came up with inflation.
But there are a number of models of inflation. What makes Guth's different?
Well, he was the first one to propose any kind of inflation, and after that, people came up with lots of different tweaks on the basic idea.
Now, let's get back to the Big Bang, the moment of truth here. Before it, how small was the space the universe was confined in?
They think it was almost zero volume. You're talking about maybe a singularity, a single point in space.
And with these findings, do we now understand what the bang of the Big Bang was like?
We still don't know what started the Big Bang, what caused it, but we now can say we know what happened a trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a second afterwards.
Now, it had to be something that got this thing to explode. As I understand it, it swelled to the size of a grapefruit and then exploded.
Exactly. Inflation is the idea that it didn't just explode, but it went through this hyper-expansion. It expanded so quickly that space was just flying apart faster than the speed of light.
Well, I always thought you can travel faster than the speed of light.
Right. It's not that space was traveling faster. It's just that the entire space-time was blowing up like a giant balloon faster than we can conceive of.
So perhaps the speed of light was different then than it is now.
You know, there's a lot of questions about just how this happened.
The universe is now estimated to be about 13.8 billion years old. What were the team that made this discovery about inflation looking for?
They were looking for a really subtle signature they call B-mode polarization. They're looking for a little twist in the light from the cosmic microwave background. This is the light that pervades the entire sky in every direction that we look in. And they found a little curling pattern in the polarization of that light that could only be created by gravitational waves caused by inflation.
Now, what are gravitational waves?
Gravitational waves are what they sound like. They're actual waves of gravity, perturbations in space and time, the fabric of space-time, that were created during this period of hyperinflation.
So how does that work with the smoothness you were talking about earlier?
Right. Well, they were very tiny, and these waves, now we see them, they're just very, very subtle signatures, but they were created at that very first moment.
So did these waves interact with the light left over from the Big Bang?
That's right. They caused this polarization signature that we see in the light.
The researchers produced the first images of gravitational waves. What do these ripples look like?
Yeah, they actually look like a little twisting pattern in the cosmic microwave background. So if you look at the map of the sky and you look at not just the light, but the polarization, which is like the orientation of the electric field of the light. So we're talking this subtle pattern here. Then you actually see a curling all over, tiny little curls throughout the light that they think were created when these ripples in space-time were formed.
Creating spiral patterns?
Right.
Do the waves interact with matter?
They definitely do, because they change the actual shape of space-time so that when matter travels through space-time, it feels the shape of space-time and it travels along a curved path.
Now, weren't these gravitational waves predicted by Albert Einstein in his theory of relativity?
That's right.
So what's taken us so long?
that's one of the really cool things about this, is that we're seeing a general relativity effect in something that was also quantum mechanical. But yes, Einstein predicted that if space and time are this single fabric, you could have gravitational waves through it. We've still never seen the waves themselves. What they saw were imprints created by the waves. But there's experiments going on now that are hoping to detect waves themselves.
And part of the excitement is that this is both quantum mechanics and relativity at work?
Exactly, because
up until now they've been seen as irreconcilable, even though we believe that both of them work.
That's right. It's one of the biggest puzzles in physics right now. They both work great on their own scale. Quantum mechanics for things that are very small, and general relativity for things that are very big. But the Big Bang was both very small and very big.
That's why people have been developing theories like string theory in attempts to reconcile the two. Does string theory play any part in these new discoveries?
Not directly, but that's one of the exciting things, is that now we have the first direct evidence from inflation. Until now, it was just a theory, a really good theory that made a lot of good predictions, but this is like having the first evidence from the crime scene, and then we can take that to test out different models we have and see if they fit.
My guest is Clara Moskowitz of Scientific American. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The experiment was known as the Background Imaging of Cosmic Extragalactic Polarization 2, or BICEP.
That's right.
BICEP 2. And it was on the South Pole. Why there?
The South Pole, they like to say, is the closest you can get to space without leaving Earth. You know, it's extremely cold, extremely dry. There's no weather to interrupt your observations, so you get this really clear, unperturbed air that that gives you really clear images, which you need if you're searching for a tiny little signal.
And then there's that hole in the ionosphere, but that's not a good part of this story.
Right.
BICEP has been described as a giant superconducting thermometer. So it's not a telescope or something that we might imagine would be put to use here?
It is a telescope, and then it's an instrument behind that telescope. That's what they're talking about. So basically, they take a telescope and look at just one patch of the sky and look at this cosmic microwave background, and then they put it through polarization filters that are measuring the orientation of that light.
And it's looking at temperatures? Is it like a thermometer? Why?
It's looking at the polarization of this light, and the light is called microwave light because of the wavelength that it's in.
Now, were these gravitational waves fairly hard to find? Is that why we're only discovering it now? Or do we have new equipment that allows us to even think along these lines?
Yeah, they are fairly hard to find because they're such subtle signature. And BICEP 2 just happened to be the first experiment, but there's actually quite a few other experiments that are also looking for this signal. So soon we should have good confirmation of this result, or we should see that the other experiments aren't finding it.
John Kovac is the one who led the team that found this, and he's been looking for years.
That's right.
So what gave him the hunch to look for these waves this way?
Well, these waves were predicted a while ago, more than a decade ago. It was predicted that if you could build a sensitive enough instrument and look at this pattern, you might be able to see them. But they didn't know how strong the waves would be, how big they would be. So it was really an open question whether this experiment would see anything at all.
Are we jumping the gun? Because, as you said, this has to be confirmed, and we've heard of other scientific breakthroughs that turned out to not be breakthroughs.
That's always a consideration, and any physicist will tell you that they're waiting for the other shoe to drop. They're waiting to see if this is confirmed. But from everything we can tell, it looks pretty good. The team themselves, BICEP 2, had this data for more than a year, and they sat on it, looking for every possible explanation for what they might have done wrong. And finally, they felt really confident that this has to be it.
How are gravitational waves related to cosmic microwave background, which was discovered 50 years ago at Bell Labs by Arno Penzias and Robert Wilson?
That's right.
What you used to call the echo of the Big Bang.
Yeah, they're very connected. And this cosmic microwave background is an interesting story. It's this light that we see in every direction we look in the sky. It's just everywhere. And when they first found it, they actually thought it was just noise on the telescope. They thought maybe pigeon droppings were causing contamination, but they realized, in fact, it was this signature from the Big Bang that won those discoverers the Nobel Prize. So the reason we can find gravitational wave imprints in this light is because this is the first light that we can see from the universe. It's the oldest light in the universe, and it was created shortly after the Big Bang. At the very first moment when light could travel freely through space, this light was it, and that's what we're still seeing.
It's hard for people to imagine that there was a moment when there was nothing, and then this little thing exploded and became the cosmos. And maybe there are also other universes as well. I think some people are reading multi-universe into this latest thinking. Has anybody come up with any theory as to how nothing suddenly becomes everything?
Religions have. Yeah, that's one of the hugest questions we have, and a lot of people are thinking about it. But one of the hardest parts is that we have no evidence from this time. I mean, we cannot study the Big Bang. We cannot see it directly. Our telescopes can't see it. And
as far back as we can go. And we can go back 13.8 billion years, can't we?
That's the entire age of the universe. We can go back almost that far, like because this cosmic microwave background is almost that old. But we can't see the moment of the Big Bang itself.
And now, as I mentioned, there are people who think that there may be universes beyond our observable universe.
That's right. One of the possible versions of inflation, or actually several models of inflation, include the multiverse as a prediction. And Andre Lindy is one of the main authors of inflation, and he's thought of this. He's a big advocate for the idea that when inflation happened, pockets of space actually broke off, and inflation stopped there while inflation still continued on everywhere else. And our universe might just be one of those bubbles, one of those pockets where inflation stopped. But there would be all these other universes, other pockets out in space that have their own laws of physics, that inflation traveled for longer in them.
So Star Trek could have found many universes in the vastness of space.
If you could travel there.
Guth seemed rather surprised that his theory of inflation was proven in his lifetime. Haven't there been a number of groundbreaking discoveries in recent years, like the Higgs boson?
That's right. The Higgs boson was huge, and people are saying this is about the same magnitude of a finding. And I think we're just living through such an amazing time for physics, because finally we have powerful experiments that can see some of these amazing signals.
Max Tegmark, who's a cosmologist at MIT, told the New York Times, I'm quoting, "I think that if this stays true, it will go down as one of the greatest discoveries in the history of science." Is that pretty much the consensus in the scientific community?
That's what I'm hearing. Physicists have told me that this discovery is as Nobel Prize worthy as it gets. They were thrilled.
Well, Arno Penzias won a Nobel Prize for an accidental thing. So in this case, this is the result of a lot of work.
That's right.
What kinds of things could we begin to learn about space, time, and energy as a result of this discovery?
This is the really exciting part, is that we can finally look at the details of inflation. You know, how fast did it happen? Just how did it play out? And one of the big questions that they want to answer is, what was the energy of the total universe like when inflation was going on? Because the energy scale can tell you a lot. There's this theory called grand unification, that all of the fundamental forces of nature, the strong, the weak, the electromagnetic, they're leaving out gravity for now. They might have all been united into a single force if you go back in time to the point where the universe was hot enough and energetic enough.
Now, how does this fit into the other realization of some years back that the universe is expanding at an increasingly fast rate?
Yeah, it definitely fits in. That discovery was dark energy, that there must be some force causing the universe to accelerate in its expansion. And basically, we're looking at that same expansion, but it happened so much quicker way back at the time of the Big Bang. If we think that the expansion now is surprisingly fast, and we do, it was much faster back then. And it's connected in the sense that dark energy still would have been a force back at that early time. And we would like to know how strong dark energy was and how it played into inflation, you know, what role it played.
Now, a listener was confused about what polarization means in this context.
Sure, yeah. It's really hard to wrap your head around because it's not something we can see. But if you've ever had polarized sunglasses, it can help you understand. You can think of it as the orientation of the light, the direction of the electromagnetic field of the light. And so polarized sunglasses block all light coming from certain directions, certain orientations. And what they're looking for here is that signal.
Now, does this discovery tell us anything about other mysterious things like antimatter and the Higgs boson?
A little bit. One physicist was telling me something interesting, which is that now that we know the energy scale of the universe during the time of inflation, or now that we can try to calculate that, you might get predictions for extra Higgs bosons, that the Higgs boson we found might just be the lightest one, the one that we could find, but there's others out there that we just don't have any kind of machines to create just yet.
Richard in Bayside wonders what exactly the universe is expanding into and what does inflation theory mean for the end of the universe?
Great questions. And if physicists had the answers, then this would be a different conversation entirely. But those are things physicists love to think about. And one way to picture expansion of the universe is not that it's expanding out into something, but that the space between every two points is expanding. So you can think of it like blowing glass, and you have little bubbles in the glass. And those bubbles, the space between them separates, but everything's expanding inwards in a way. There's no words.
It sounds like continental drift.
You can see me struggling that we don't have human words or the human brain can't really picture this, but yeah, similar.
Well, the human brain can't imagine infinity, for example, and yet we accept it as a reality, or at least most people accept it as a reality.
That's right.
Another listener wonders if inflation has connections with matter and antimatter.
That's a good question. It definitely has connections with matter. You know, I think that everything in physics is connected on a certain level, but it's not directly connected to antimatter in the sense that it's going to tell us immediately why the universe is made of matter and not antimatter, which is one of the biggest puzzles also going on in physics today.
We know that these kinds of conversations cause a lot of confusion for people. I know when I read the New York Times science articles on these kinds of things, I want to ask the reporter or the scientists questions to clear up things. So we invite our listeners to give us a call now, 212-433-9692. Some people have already been writing in, and I've been asking those questions, but you can also call us at 212-433-9692 if you have a question, because this is really complicated stuff, and I have to admit that I am stunned by how much you know, because I know so little about this, Clara.
I feel like I know so little. I have so many questions, and the best part of my job is picking the brains of these physicists and asking the same kind of questions you have.
Well, I'm wondering about something we talked about earlier, the grand unification theory. Now, I understand how relativity fits into this, but how does quantum mechanics fit in, and how may this eventually lead us to some grand unification theory?
Right. So we're talking about one of the few cases where you have something that's both very big and very small, in the sense that the universe right after the Big Bang was very, very small in volume and very, very big in mass, in density. And so both the theory of quantum mechanics and general relativity really have to come into play. And the gravitational waves that they found, those are quantum effects. It was these quantum fluctuations that caused those waves during inflation. So when we study them, we're getting insight into the quantum nature of gravity in a way.
Does unification mean that at one point all the forces we know, gravity, the strong and weak nuclear forces, etc., were all one?
That's exactly the idea, yes. Except gravity they're leaving out for now, because gravity seems to work so much differently than all the other forces we know. And
it just complicates things.
It complicates things.
Let's take a call from Bob from Rego Park. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Leonard, great show. I'd like to ask you a question. You know, I'm a yoga teacher. It's fascinating. Could you talk a little about my question was about energy. Can you utilize this as a source, a practical source of energy for cars all our electrical needs and actually house this energy since consciousness? And the second question is, how does this relate to consciousness itself?
So this is getting a little mystical for me, but...
If you could harness this energy, you would have the best source of energy ever, but that's definitely not possible.
Well, one of the other big stories right now is that we now think that fusion can be possible.
They're getting closer to it, but I think that we're still far ways off from saying it's possible. But yeah, that's right. Trying to make the kind of fusion that happens inside of stars is an idea for a renewable energy source that is almost like going back to these Big Bang types of energy sources, but on a much, much smaller scale.
Larry from Bayside, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I was trying to understand the concept that the universe started as a microscopic speck, grew to something the size of a grapefruit in a rapid inflation, and then exploded. Since an explosion, in conventional terms, is a rapid expansion with a conversion of energy, of matter into energy, what happens at the moment that the grapefruit explodes? How is that different?
You're just talking about different speeds of expansion.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, you're totally on the money here, and the explosion isn't like a bomb. You know, it's actually just this blowing up of space like a giant balloon, but it happens so much faster than normal expansion, the kind of expansion that's happening today, that they call it an explosion.
What's the change in the physics that causes the acceleration from the grapefruit to what we understand as the universe expanding?
That's one of their big questions that they're hoping this measurement is going to help solve, but they think that there was, you know, a field associated with inflation driving this inflation, and that it was a force that was going on then that is not going on today. So something special was causing this inflation.
Something other than dark energy?
That's right. Dark energy would have been present, but something other than dark energy.
Another mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for calling us. And we go now to Larry from Manhattan. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon. My question is almost like a follow-up to that same notion of dark energy. Is it possible in that primordial universe that all of the space that was to evolve into what we have now, all trapped in its, I think, 11 dimensions, that it somehow is imbued in every particle that then exploded, and then that particles or that space is actually generating the what we think of as dark energy, but it's actually space that's pushing everything, and it's not an energetic force in itself, but a spatial force?
Well, I guess I don't know what you mean by spatial force, but you're right that we don't know what dark energy is. So, you know, everything's on the table still. Physicists are certainly scratching their heads. And, I mean, one of the best guesses we have is this idea of this vacuum energy, which sounds similar to what you're talking about, the idea that space itself has an energy to it and that this energy is driving this expansion.
Right. It's. I think that there's a postulate that there are actually 11 dimensions of space that were all coiled inside of themselves, and that they could perhaps be somehow imbued to every particle, and that those particles then interact in the physical world to create and move things, almost like...
But what about the whole thing about dimensions? I've heard 16 dimensions, 13 dimensions, 12, 11 now. Does anybody have any idea?
For sure, yeah. That's one of the big predictions of string theory, among other theories.
Sculptors still believe in three dimensions.
Right, exactly. And then four if you count time. And that's all we're betting on right now. But there's certainly a lot of equations get simpler. A lot of the math works out better if you can add on extra dimensions. And we don't see these dimensions, but there's ways that they might show their faces. And one of those ways that we're looking for them right now, I was just looking at a paper about this, is that at the Large Hadron Collider, they're looking for quantum black holes, just tiny, tiny, minuscule black holes that would be created by these extra dimensions. So far, they haven't found any, so we have no evidence for extra dimensions just yet, but that could be coming up.
Mario, a listener, wonders, if the universe is expanding, why do galaxies sometimes collide? Is it because, as you said earlier, it's the space between that's expanding?
No, that's a great question. And it's because on local scales, gravity still wins. So on a large scale, everything is expanding. But if two things get close enough, then they attract. It's kind of like magnets. You know, if you have a magnet on the other side of your kitchen, it doesn't feel the refrigerator. But if you get close enough, it's going to glom onto the refrigerator no matter what you know, expansion is going on in the kitchen at large, and that's what's happening here.
We go now to Don. Hi, Don. I guess you're somewhere in New Jersey on the highway.
Yeah, I pulled off because I wanted to ask this question. Thanks for taking the call.
Go ahead.
I took astrophysics in college. I went to Cornell. I'm a surgeon now, but I knew my mathematical limit. When these theories are accepted and before maybe they're rebuked, is it the understanding from your point of view that most astrophysicists can understand the math well enough to know intrinsically that this is true? Or is there only a few people on the planet who are really capable of accepting this is true because they fully understand the mathematics, which forces it to be true?
There's a lot of people that get the mathematics. This mathematics is something that all physicists who study inflation deal with on a daily basis. And, you know, for me and for you, it definitely seems so obscure that it must be the secret kept by just a tiny group of people. But certainly there's many people that get this result really intimately.
Thank you all so much for calling. And thank you, Clara Moskowitz, associate editor who covers astronomy, physics, spaceflight, and mathematics for Scientific American. You've cleared up a lot, or maybe confused me even more, but thanks for being on our show.
Thanks for having me.